joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Delbert!
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, Booth Bang! Yes.
It's his name.
Thank you guys so much for coming. It has been a very big week.
Oh, huge week. We say that a lot, but this time we don't mean anything. We don't mean it anytime. It's always the same. Every week's the same.
Why was it a big week?
I read in the Post today that Gene Roddenberry's ashes are going to be shot into space. This is related because it's nerdy. With his wife who just died. But they also said that they're like, some of his ashes were already shot into space with Timothy Leary's. I don't know, are they friends?
He was big drugs.
But they didn't make it and fell back to Earth and burning up in space.
And this is supposed to be a funny story that just
kind of fucked
telling.
Up, right? That's I'm just saying, like, it's not over when we die.
Okay.
What was your?
I think the most important thing that happened is Alex got a haircut.
And that is the hilarious difference between Justin and Pete. We have an awesome show for you guys. Very exciting. Three great guests for you, so let's bring them out. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight on the show we have Dev Slott, Heidi McDonald, and Kimmy Gatewood. So this has been a big week for you. Mighty Avengers came out. You've taken on the title from Bendis. So what's different about the book? What's your mission statement for this book as opposed to where it was previously?
Previously, it sold more.
Hell of a bitch.
No, what the deal is with the book now is we're trying to make it more Avengery.
Okay.
Nice. No, because everything like Brian's been doing since Avengers Disassembled was creating like a whole new kind of Avengers brand for the Marvel Universe.
Right.
So what we're doing in Mighty Avengers is counter-programming. So it's like a more classic Avengers lineup, characters who have lots of Avengers cred. we're making the Avengeriest Avengers book we can.
And that's hard because there are like nine of them.
There are, but we're the Avengeriest.
You know, not to get too technical or comedy-based, but do you think there's enough of a room in the market for Mighty Avengers, New Avengers, Dark Avengers, Avengers Leader Initiative, and whatever else is coming out?
Since they're all in like the top 25, I'll say yes.
And what else? You're working on Amazing Spider-Man.
I'm working on that.
Wow.
No, it's like, mustn't clap. doing Amazing Spider-Man 3 times a month with the huge, but yeah, thank God there's four of us. So, last week we just had the New Ace Die hardcover with John Romita Jr.
Awesome.
And the new John Romita Jr. arc with Mark Guggenheim started last week, which will answer all the many mysteries that are going on in Amazing Spider-Man.
And I think we're going to talk about Spider-Man a little bit as well later on, but I think last time you were on the show, it was the Brain Trust again, right?
We've changed the name because we're taking so much crap.
Yeah.
We're now officially Webheads with incarnation number 2.
Oh, that's very cute.
Yeah.
Good.
That's our softball team name.
Webheads. How long has it been now? It's been 9 months?
12 years.
12 years.
Wow. Where does the time go?
How tight a group are you guys still? Is it still you guys are controlling the storylines? You guys are working them out all together?
Yeah. We've got another Spider Summit coming up soon.
It's a real name.
I'm not about that.
We've got an Avengers Summit coming up next week, so... We get everybody in a room and they lock us in and then all the ideas
and the walls slowly and that's how comics get made.
Yeah.
Cool, Heidi, let's chat with you. Yay. So you were telling me a little bit backstage. For those who don't know, Heidi works on the excellent blog PW Beat, which reports regularly on comic books. So you get a lot of comic books sent to you, I assume.
I do. Yes. I really do. Hate me because I get freebies.
I work at Marvel and I don't get freebies. Yeah.
So you hate her.
So where do you put all of them?
That's an ongoing problem, actually, and it's become very serious. I mean, it was really embarrassing. I get so many packages. The one day I was walking on the street, and I heard someone yell, Miss McDonald. I thought, that's right by the rodeo bar. I thought somebody I knew. And look, there's the UPS truck. And it was the UPS man saw me on the street and said, hey, I got a package for you here in the truck. So, I mean, he was literally stopping me on the street to give me packages. And
One quick question. How well known are you at the rodeo bar? That was your go-to.
I'm fairly well known there as well. In fact, I'm trying to store my comics in their basement.
Mechanical Bull Rider?
Well, yeah.
You're not joking, are you?
No. Anybody. So they just stack up, and if you go even a week, I mean, I realize this is about the cheesiest, lamest problem you could possibly have. Getting too much free shit.
You could build a fort.
I do have a small fort, and trying to get rid of them is a terrible problem sometimes.
Do you do the Halloween dump, like when?
No, you can't give comics to children.
I used to do this back when I was on the comps list, and you'd get like a stack every month. Around every Halloween, I would like go through and I'd do the purge, and I'd give kids like but you could sort it. Like, here's stuff that you can give to a kid.
Well, that's it. You have to go through.
You have to sort it.
I wrote, I put out a message on my blog and said, I have all these comics that, free for the taking. And people wrote in and said, they said, can't you give them to Children's Hospital? They said, no, we can't take them because they're objectionable content. And they did say, and this is true, I am not making this up, someone did write from Bellevue and say they love them at Bellevue Mental Hospital, especially for
I used to be a college intern on the Star Line for, Heathcliff and Alf and Barbie. And it was my job to go through all the fan mail, and so much of it came from Bellevue and mental institutions.
Wow.
And
explains comic sales.
You'd see the creepiest thing, like this one guy would write all the time to Alf, and he would never lift his pencil, like the safety pencil, and it would just be these long strings of, I love Alf, Alf is God, God is Christ, Christ is Alf, over and over and over again.
Well, that's because with
you
one
got
hand
my
is
letter.
There's this one letter with Barbie. All the mail you got to Barbie, girls have a way better grasp of the English language than boys at every age.
Hell yeah!
So you could never tell how old the person was, especially if it came out like a word processor. And then you get at the end and you go like, I love what you're doing, all my best to everyone working on the book, age 8 or age 7. And you couldn't tell until you hit the end. And I got one of these letters, and it's going, same boilerplate, give my regards to everyone on staff, you're doing a great job, please keep putting out more Barbie comics. P.S. Here's a picture of me and my guns. And you flip it over, and there's a picture of somebody who looks like Clint Eastwood's father in camo with two guns like this. It was to Barbie. It was the scariest thing.
Did he like what you were writing?
No, it was the Barbie people.
So. It was to Barbie, the
Barbie comic.
Or it was to the comic, like,
maybe.
Yeah. When will you be my bride?
we had a problem at Marvel. Because Marvel is a wonderfully ethical company.
Who's sitting up there?
No, I don't know. I can't see. But we were putting out a Nightmare on Elm Street Black and White magazine, and we started getting all these letters from little kids, and you tell from like the crayon scribbles. That were the creepiest letters of, I wish I was like Freddy, I wish I had claws and I'd kill these people. And Marvel got so many of these, we're like, we don't care how much we're making on this comic, we're stopping it.
Yeah.
And it was all from the response. These scary little children letters to Freddy Krueger. It was awful.
Isn't it wonderful to know when you touch people like of that time, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gimme, let's turn.
Oh, thank you so much!
Who's on your kill list?
Are you gonna touch? Yeah, all right.
Well, first of all, welcome back from L.A.
Thank you. I was just at the Awesome Summit, which is right next to the Spider Summit.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty great.
What are you guys working on?
Awesome stuff. Yeah, fireworks. But cotton candy and shit.
Cool.
Oh, cool. I can't wait for the new cotton candy. you do have something pretty big coming up on the 13th, though.
Oh, yes. Nerdcore Rising, the documentary I've been working on for 5 years, is finally making a New York City premiere February 13th at the 92Y. So check out the website, nerdcorerising.com. Yay!
For those who don't know, Nerdcore Rising is about...
It's about MC Frontalot. He raps about Dungeons and Dragons and nerdy things and comic books and whatnot, and making cameo appearances are Weird Al Yankovic, Jello Biafra, Brian Posehn, and Prince Paul of De La Soul. So it talks about, you know, nerdcore and kind of the new music, how the web influences how music is distributed and all that, and about one nerdy rapper who can make it. You gotta have drama. It's a documentary after all.
Cool. Well, everybody, check that out. We're gonna move on with our first section, which we like to call the stack. All right. First thing we're gonna talk about, of course, is Mighty Avengers.
I love it.
Alex, I will say, some people are going, woo! People are going, whoa! Which I don't know if it's like woo or
they're just a little tired. Mighty Avengers, whole new team of superheroes on here. Talk about a little bit what goes into putting together a new superhero team. What are you allowed to use? What are you not allowed to use?
Oh, that's a good question.
You get past this love fest. Jeez, you too.
I also thought
he slapped me when he walked out.
Doesn't anyone want to, like, there's someone on the internet be able to, like, when you see him in person?
Yeah!
I was saying to Matt Brady, like, a while ago, like, if Newsarama had one collective face, I just And then his response was, every day the same thing. This guy runs it, so. That's going on YouTube now.
We're barely on the internet. We're on the very edge of the internet.
We're about to fall off.
But no, there was a time when the working plan for Mighty Avengers was, it was kind of like inheriting the Yankees and only getting the pinstripe suits. It's like all the players were leaving, and it was like, here, you get to write Mighty Avengers, but you can't use any of these characters. Have fun. And it was like, the plan was originally to take a whole bunch of the initiative kids. This was before it was even discussed with me. And graduate them, and they'd be the Mighty Avengers. And I'm like, well, that's young X-Men. If I'm writing Mighty Avengers, give me the keys to the car. That's what the car I want to drive. So I was running around trying to get any characters. And I was talking to Bendis, and I'm like, well, can I have this one? No, that's being used. This one, anyone? And I'm like, give me something. And he's like, well, the Skrull ship, you know, you pick people who are coming back from the Skrull stuff. I'm like, oh, what about Elektra? That's great. I'm like, awesome, I've got something. I don't know what this is. She'll be the main person. It'll be Elektra. I was just like frantic. And I talked to Tom Brevoort. I'm like, Bendis says I can have Elektra. Oh, Bendis can't give you Elektra.
So like, wait, you run around looking for characters?
I was running around looking for characters. I got this point. I'm calling Matt Fraction on the phone. I'm like, let me have Nightcrawler. Let me have him. Wolverine can be in 2 books. Let me just have Nightcrawler. And no, we got plans for that.
Who has plans for Nightcrawler?
I was frantic, running around trying to get, and then everything started falling into place, and little characters then started becoming like, no one's got Chitrasta yet? She's in the initiative! Don't use her. So I started like locking up characters, and everything started working out. And you're not going to see the full team until 24, like who's officially on the team, until Mighty Avengers 24. But I'm really happy with the team we have. I'm like, this is an Avengery Avenger team.
Now you bring up Jocasta. When you have her, and then you have Hank Pym becoming the Wasp, and then Jocasta's been programmed with the old Wasp brain, sort of. Is there an Ultron story coming, basically? It seems like a slam dunk.
You got to. Yeah. You have to do it. But we're going to wait a little bit. And we've already hinted in Secret Invasion Requiem that her name's going to be Jocasta Pym by 2010. So either he's going to adopt her or...
weird choice. Wow, you'll either be my bride or my child.
Exactly. Read the book.
Been there.
Cool. So pick that up. Let's move on to talk about Final Crisis Superman Beyond 3D, number 2 of 2. Pass this over to you guys.
Real descending total.
This is, of course, completing the storyline that started in Final Crisis Superman at 1, where Superman did some stuff that I didn't understand.
I think drugs is what it seemed like.
Yeah.
No, Grant Morrison did those.
This is tying into Final Crisis. This is really hard to describe.
Certainly.
Essentially, okay, it ends up with a giant Superman robot made out of stories fighting an immortal vampire in some space.
In some space. For the sake of all stories. Because Superman drank the bleed and kept it in his body and kissed her, and then she woke up.
Because you can't hold it in your hand, so he put it in his mouth.
I love that, man. Like, every time you read a Grant Morrison story, it's like someone's giving you his dream journal.
Yeah, it really is. It's a plate of ideas, and you're like, oh, no more. Ideas.
You guys, clearly somebody did not look at this in 3D. I'm just saying.
That might be Pete's copy. That's
Pete.
He's keeping
it. No, I have my own 3D glasses. You can't touch this.
Those are actually
a little switch.
He's actually, Pete is dimension blind.
I actually like this.
The thing that gets me though is if you got this, shouldn't you do Superman Red, Superman Blue?
Yeah.
Little meta for the crowd.
I actually like this. I think this is such a linchpin story for Final Crisis. I'm surprised that it's in this satellite book. And this is directly feeds into Final Crisis 7, which comes out tomorrow. And if you don't read this, I feel like you're going to be totally lost. If you're not already lost.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you read this, you're going to be totally lost.
Yeah, true.
Well, either way.
What's Lost times Lost? The TV show Lost.
It's like totally awesome.
Yeah.
I actually like this too, which is weird because I haven't particularly liked anything that's been going on in Final Crisis, feeling all over the place. For some reason, I think Morrison is doing a much better job writing Superman than any other character. Because Superman is the character that can do anything, and that feeds into what Morrison likes to write. So this is ridiculous, kind of fun story meta stuff, which is what Morrison does all the time. And it does actually hold together a lot better than pretty much anything else he's doing right now. But the unfortunate part is it doesn't work as a story by itself, because it's also completely part of Final Crisis.
Yeah.
It'll make a nice big book, right?
Please tell me.
It's a little less crazy than what's going on in Final Crisis, which is a little bit more palatable. But the 3D is awesome. In the first one and the second one, it's almost worth it just to get put on the glasses and enjoy.
Yeah.
Can you really do that on the subway? Excuse me.
Yes, you can.
Because that was his
record. I'm
going
to eat my dinner.
Yes, you can. Kimmy, director of Nerdcore Red.
Yeah!
Woo! I understand. Thank you. That's correct.
Would you say pick this up?
It's good. 2 issues.
All right, let's move on and talk about Amazing Spider-Man 584. This is
booming applause over
bear
here
claps.
For the giant-handed man over here.
Mark Guggenheim wrote this, of course, but Dan, talk a little bit about what goes into this arc and what it's leading up to.
What goes into this arc is
we have to chase the character first.
It's eight pages of awesome. Is what goes into this arc. It's John Romita Jr. returning to Amazing Spider-Man.
What a weird noise.
Thank you,
Boost Man. And this is going to resolve 3 of the big mysteries that have been going on in the book. You're going to find out what the secret is behind the Spider Tracer killer, the secret identity of the Menace, and it will resolve who will be the next mayor of New York in the Marvel Universe.
Yes, Kimmy.
Me.
Spoiler.
Okay. What did you guys think about this?
I like that we're finally figuring out the answers here, because
What I really like about the way you guys are doing it is you do have subplots. So many stories now are like, this is the last four issues, and then everything is made up from the first issue and ends by the fourth. So it's nice to see the old way of having all these subplots going. You resolve one, another one takes its place, blah, blah, blah. That's great.
Is that because there's so many writers on it? Is that why it's
layered? When we get to the summit, we all talk about where we're going. We plan on a big board where everything's going. The more we do this, I think the better we're getting at it. Because Marvel's never put out a book like this before. It's one title coming out 36 times a year. No one writer can do it unless you're Jeff Johns. or Brian Michael Bendis. Equal time. It just means we have to figure this stuff out. We have to link it together and make sure all the web comes together.
Now, is there fights to see who writes what arc, or is it just pretty much if you come up with the idea, it's yours?
It changes back and forth. I stole the Anti-Venom story from somebody else. I took him out with a lead pipe. And the action figure comes out in March. It's my first guy who's made it to an action figure. I'm really
happy. Oh, that's cool.
I know. What is your next arc? When is it?
It's coming up in April. It's a two-parter with Spidey and the FF, Barrett Kitson. It's going to be great. It's going to pick up on some fun stuff we did in the Spider-Man Human Torch mini a while back. And at the end of it, there is a major game changer for Spider-Man's world that we're all kind of getting jazzed about going into the next big push next year of Spidey. And it will be reflected in almost every Marvel title.
Oh, wow.
Like, nowadays, it's like you can feel that Spider-Man's in that universe, that he's meshed in. He's not in a little bubble. Because, like, other people will pick up a newspaper and it's the DB instead of the Daily Bugle. Or little things here and there. Or that no one remembers his secret identity is picked up in other books. This is something bigger. And it's something, it's new. It's not us, you know, dealing with ramifications of stuff. It's us moving forward with something new, which is exciting.
Do you think there'll be big, like, riots? People like, how could you do that?
That Pete will lead.
I remember at a Marvel Summit with everybody, not just the Spider guys.
Summit! Yeah!
Kimmy's having a summit. Yep. we'll all be there.
We told people the change, and a lot of the other writers were like, "What?" And like, you have to. Like, but then the next summit, everyone.
Summit.
Yeah. The next one, everyone was like, "Oh, and that's when you're doing that," and everyone was like, you know, geared towards it.
Heidi, do you have any summits?
Summits? I have a summit with myself. That's the problem. Yeah. Self-summiting, yeah.
I self-summit all the time.
I knew you were going to go there.
I'm just going to go to a thesaurus now and come up with a different word.
So pick this up. It's great. Let's move on and talk about Mysterious the Unfathomable, number one.
It's Jeff Parker. He's the coolest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Tom Fowler is the second coolest guy in the world.
They finally teamed up. There must be some animosity between them.
And join together.
The third coolest guy in the world.
The star push? Oh, that's debatable.
He called them up and was like, I'll be on your back cover.
Let's make a deal.
What do you guys think about this issue?
It's the art is fantastic. It helps with the magical world that it's set up in.
Yeah. Oh, very quickly. It's essentially setting up this magician, Mysterious the Unfathomable, who is actually a magician, actually uses magic, and it's told through the eyes of his new assistant.
Yeah.
Pete.
The art's amazing. Really helps with the story, really brings you into the world. The writing's great. It's really setting up some interesting things. As far as like a first issue, I'm completely on board and wanting the second one. I think it does a great job.
I'm surprised this didn't come out through Vertigo. He has like a Vertigo feel to it, and it's a Wildstorm book.
Yes.
Good thing.
No, I agree with you.
I was lobbing that to you, by the way.
No, I was just going to say that Jeff brought that up on his blog. He was talking about how people were like, why is this a Wildstorm book? You know, Wildstorm has done a lot of really great things in the past. Now they're more known for adaptations and rebooting Wildcats over and over and over again. In the past, they have done a lot of creator-owned stuff that actually went over quite well. So it's kind of a return. So they haven't left that behind, really. So.
I agree. It's a good book. It's the guy, more than a magician, he does like seances and whatnot. There's a big seance here. And when they go into the spirit world, it's a really cool take on it that I really liked. Definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, very unique book, very interesting, very fun, and definitely curious to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Yay. All right, let's move on and talk about Dark Avengers number one. What'd you guys think about this?
It's definitely very exciting. I answered some questions, kind of really set things up. I'm into it. I'm excited about it. I almost feel like I'm more excited now than when Secret Invasion started happening.
Really? Why?
Yeah.
Because it's more evil.
Yes! You know me.
Now, in this, Norman Osborn kind of sets up a bunch of fake villains as heroes dressing as heroes.
Yeah, which was very cool.
So there's a Wolverine character. But it's not Wolverine, it's Wolverine's son.
Right?
Yeah, you like that.
Well, I thought it was funny because he's like, why would you do that? He's like, imagine how pissed off Wolverine's going to be.
Yeah, my dad. Look, my dad.
Actual dialogue in the book.
Yeah.
Is this Tommy Lee Jones in here?
Right? Yeah. What happened, Dan?
Nothing.
Yeah, that's... It's funny, when people use photos... do that. Sometimes it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. That one, it's like, that's too much Tommy Lee Jones.
Maybe it's an actor they can afford.
Yeah.
Oh! Stop it!
I do actually really like Mike Deodato's art. He does a good job. He did a great job on Thunderbolts. This is essentially what Thunderbolts was, which is a dark, villainous team of superheroes. So having him come over to this title makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I would, honestly, because I wasn't crazy about, hey, let's take this great idea. I don't like it when people take somebody else's really good idea and get really excited about it, and they're like, cool, you stop doing your idea, and I'll do
it. I want to do it.
Which is that what this kind of felt like, but it establishes it nicely, and it has a nice tone to it. And I do think Bendis picks up on what Warren Ellis set up with Thunderbolts.
Yeah, and the way he brings all the characters into the fold is really smart.
Yeah.
He gives Venom a little pill or something that makes him tiny, which it's better in the books.
It's like a chemical. It's like a chemical brick.
Yeah.
That he has to throw it. But I remember reading it, hearing Bendis tell it, and then reading it in the script, and then seeing it. It's a cool bit. Yeah.
I also enjoyed when Venom was eating Skrulls, and they made the Skrull change into Spider-Man before he ate them. That was great.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Weird fetish.
Talk a little bit about the coordination that goes on between the Avengers books, or if any.
No, it's really good. Like with any kind of book, you get to read the scripts ahead and work it all out, and we go to these gatherings.
Yeah, I got more gatherings tomorrow.
And we do coordinate and figure things out. So like, if you look at like Secret Invasion. But I think that was a really good example of how all this stuff gets coordinated, where you can have a miniseries, you can have Hercules, like all his adventures are dealing with this section of it, and the Initiative's dealing with this, and Captain Britain's dealing with that, and each one can stand on its own, but they all weave together to a beautiful tapestry.
Oh, that's nice. Oh.
So if you like tapestries, you'll love this book.
Vicious, evil tapestry.
That's pretty much all tapestries.
Evil
tapestries. Let's talk about Green Lantern number 37.
But it's all red.
Well, that's
now you're on board. Now you're on board.
That's because it's Rage of the Red Lantern.
The most notable thing about this book is that Pete liked it.
Yes.
And he hates Green Lantern.
I'm not a big fan of the Green Lantern, they're doing a really good job of making this interesting. It's going past Green Lantern sitting around, come up with creative ways to use their rings. Look, I'm sitting on a beanbag chair. That's not really here.
Great art,
by the way.
The furniture. Oh. The furniture arc.
It was like one issue too long.
Yeah. One beanbag too long.
They're really setting things up in a way which I didn't expect. Like, I thought when it was like all these different color Green Lanterns, it would be lame. And it almost was, especially with the blue ones that are really laid back. Like, we don't fight. well, okay, we'll fight this one, but
do they all
get above this?
Do they all get together and make a rainbow?
That would be.
They will. They I bet will. You something like that.
Well, for those of you who haven't been reading it, there's Green Lanterns. Green is based on willpower. Last year, or the year before, they introduced yellow, which is based on fear. Now there's also purple, which is based on love.
That's the lantern you would be.
Yeah. It's like fits.
Do they all get different oats?
Yes. They do, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And some of them are pretty lame.
This one is like she had too many strawberry margaritas.
Yeah. That's another reason that Pete likes it is all the red lanterns barf blood. Which is a dream of yours.
Does each lantern have a color that's a weakness that's like too off on the color wheel? Like, does it all link up?
I don't know. But, I think. Yes.
This was written in an eighth grade art class, so a lot of it is color wheel based.
The color thing is pretty silly.
I don't think it's silly. It's a little, it's very simple. And it's like, oh, they're not really going to do that. And they do, but the way, the actual characters in the story, what the fuck? I'm just kidding.
Private jokes. Comic jokes.
I'll get it later. The actual characters and the way they're moving through the story is really cool and really detail-oriented.
Johns is a great writer, and he's doing a great job with it. It's weird. It feels like, all right, I'm doing... It feels like he's saying, like, I'm doing my best with this concept, except he created this concept. So he saddles himself with the silliest thing he possibly could, and he's trying to make it work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No. I hear this stuff all the time, like, this is silly, but this isn't silly. You're reading books about guys in costumes and jumping. It's all silly.
Nothing silly so far.
No, it's like when you were like a kid and you're reading Captain Marvel and you got to, oh, I can buy Captain Marvel, but the Marvel Bunny? No. Is there like a bend and then break moment?
We had to draw a line in the sand at some point.
Okay, and multicolor lanterns is your line.
That's his line. Mine's going to be weird.
Pick this up. Right?
Definitely, it's great.
Okay, great. All right, this one, last thing we're going to talk about on the stack is X Factor number 39.
Creepiest book ever.
I love babies.
Oh, if you love babies.
Don't read it. Don't read it.
That's
I can't read.
But I think everything is equal now because the woman just had a.
Oh, God! Yeah. What is this? Fuck you guys. Oh, okay.
I know it's messed up.
It is.
But the it's all made up in the real world now because someone just had octuplets, so it all balances.
For those of you who haven't been reading this, we had Peter David on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about this issue that was coming up.
And he made a very specific request.
It looks like Peter David.
That's a creepy baby.
His first words will be, don't give away the spoiler.
Yes.
He actually said, don't give away the spoilers to us.
I beg of you, if you only spoil one book, do not spoil this book.
Yes.
Well, what can we talk about, though? Huh? Where are we now? Where are we now, Peter David?
Yeah. Who hasn't read this yet?
Okay, do this.
I can't hear that.
Two people raised their hands.
All right. So we can talk about it then.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Talk about it.
Yeah, talk about
it. It's not like it's not going to go on YouTube.
So,
I haven't read it.
It's been
Well, you have Jamie Madrox and Siren slept together a couple of months ago.
Nine months ago. Just to be scientific. I don't know if you can read it.
I know.
Justin?
Good luck, Marty.
How does that happen?
Where does that happen? Turn the cameras off. Here's what happens.
Anyway, she's finally having her baby. There's this nice, sweet, romantic issue. She proposes to him in the hospital. They have the baby. For those of you who don't know, Madrox is the multiple man. Which means he hits himself or he hits himself on something and he creates a double, a dupe. So finally he gets to hold the baby and they hand him the baby and he starts sucking the baby into his body.
And he can't stop it. The baby's like doing it.
Right. And the reason is, it turns out, because the baby never existed, it's one of his dupes created it. So Siren, for 9 months, has carried this baby, and now it doesn't exist anymore. And he can't get it back.
And she freaks out at him.
Yeah. Well, she should.
Yeah, exactly.
They
How is that possible?
That was great.
That was awesome.
Your summary was good too, but that.
This is a great issue. I mean, this is fantastic. Excellent twist that makes a lot of sense with the characters.
It's upsetting.
So smart and upsetting and heartbreaking.
Yeah,
right. And Peter David did promise that similar big things are going to happen pretty much every issue from here on out.
The next two
issues, I can't take
any
more of that.
It only gets more intense in the next two issues, which is
yeah. He starts sucking other babies.
I don't even want to know what the variant is going to look like.
And that's it for the stat. It is time for our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions, and for that, we're going to go to Booth Bay.
Booth Bay!
Morning.
Oh, yeah. Booth Bay lives in the booth. That's his superpower.
It's hard times, man.
Yeah, it is.
So, our first question was tight.
What?
I have to ask it, or you know, things will happen.
Did someone threaten?
I can't. For Dan, your thoughts on the cancellation of She-Hulk and the new Savage She-Hulk?
The new Savage She-Hulk that's coming out, it's a mini, and it's going to be by Fred Van Lente. So right there, it's immediately brilliant. So everyone should pick it up because Fred is just one of the best, hardest working writers out there.
We had him on the show last week, and man, he really talked you down.
I don't care if it's a one-way street. As far as cancellation of She-Hulk, it's not like the character's dead. She's walking around. She's doing stuff. She's just not in a book anymore.
She's like a pretender.
She's gone.
Yeah.
She's in the summit.
That's not being in a better place.
Maybe she could be a Mighty Avenger.
Next question.
Oh!
There we go. All right. If you ask the question, raise your hand.
Yep.
Pete's going to bring you a present.
And
let's get the next question.
This is for Heidi. Small publisher who survived Diamond's new solicitation rules and how? This is for Matt.
It depends on just to
tell the story.
Yes, the story. The story is that Diamond, which is the big distributor of comics, actually almost a monopoly, decided to raise the minimum amount of that they would have to make on every issue of a book they carried in order to carry it. And they raised it from $1,500 to $2,500, which doesn't sound like very much, but that is a lot. That is a lot of money. And will small publishers survive this if they publish pamphlets? Probably not. It's very difficult for companies that publish. Are we off the record here? I mean, it's like
What record?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that are putting out William Shatner comics. You know what? Those have never worked. They're not
going to
work this time.
What happened?
No, because those Star Trek Gold Key comics, they never sold.
Well, though he didn't write them. Yes. So, I mean, I just picked that out of the hat.
Now I want to see a Boston Public comic. You know, like, never.
Well, tell IDW that's their game. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult. And I've talked to a lot of publishers, and it's going to be very, very difficult for them to survive because a lot of books weren't already making that much money. And I think it's actually probably we need to trim the catalog a little bit. And I think things that survive will be good. I think things that survive will have an audience. And at some point you just have to say, who's reading this book? And if it's just you, I know a lot of people who just want to get their book out there and they'll think they'll get it through Diamond and it's not going to happen anymore. So I think it's a little reality check for a lot of people.
Are we going to see a rise of a secondary company, you know, that probably already exists, a smaller Diamond, if you want?
There is a Haven, a company called Haven, that's a distributor, and they say that they're going to pick up a lot of the slack. So, I mean, that's great. I'm not saying,
Do you think more people will go to the web?
To the web? Yeah, but people already are going to the web, you know, and they're already finding an audience on the web, and then they're putting out a bigger book with a higher price point. And if you're putting out a collection that it costs more, it's much easier to make that minimal. And that's just the way it is. You've got to build your audience on the on the web now, or the web head, but, you know.
There was an article in the Times today that covered this.
Yes, we even made the New York Times.
Wow. Yeah. The old gray lady. And it ended saying that someone who ran a website was like, oh, I'm going to try to help distribute books and try to get people to go through me and kind of distribute on a very small scale and see if that could eventually turn into another.
Everybody brings up Bone as an example of a book that wouldn't have made it under this. You know, Bone is a book by Jeff Smith. It sold 2.5 million copies now in paperback through Scholastic. And when it first came out, it sold only a few hundred copies. But Jeff was a genius, and people caught on to it. Now, not everybody is a genius like Jeff Smith is, but I think you have to think about it. You have to think, who is going to read this book? Who wants it? You know, you're looking at these books from Marvel and DC. Great books from Marvel and DC. But you know, those have an audience because they have characters. But not everyone does. Not every book is of that level of craft. I hate to say it. You've got to learn how to connect with an audience.
Yeah, but Boston Public Comics didn't make the stack.
There we go. That's the challenge out there.
Cool. Raise your hand if you ask that. Pete's going to bring it in. And we have time for one more question, Kevin.
What is the most well-done superhero death ever?
Death?
Ooh. Well, I mean, clearly it's Cypher from New Mutants.
Oh, no.
Got to talk about riots in the street when he died. Certain panic.
Well, that's for me.
I'm going to say Captain America, just because I really like the fact that after he died, the comic went on without him, and it did such an amazing job of building the world that he helped create and all the other characters. And it was so great because I wouldn't say you didn't miss him, but it was just so cool the way it kept on. It wasn't like, we're going to bring him back. It's all about, oh, let's just throw a mask on this guy, throw a shield on this guy. It just it did it classy in a really good way that made me proud to, you know, read the comic.
I don't know. It's tough because any good death gets cheapened once they bring the character back. It's like, oh.
Well, in general, I think, you know, an argument could be made that there have been no important character deaths since Gwen Stacy, almost. Since that was the first really big one where there was a character who I'm sure they will bring back at some point, but
no.
That was never.
No. We all linked arms. They wanted to bring her back.
Yeah.
And when we came on after One More Day, we had a meeting and they told us what was happening in One More Day. And they said, we've been arguing back and forth about Gwen Stacy. Do you guys want her in your book? And we went, leave the poor girl in the ground. she's had like five different attempts to bring her back, where clone, kids, it just, over and over again they've tried different ways, and
at some point you have to have a story that really touches you like that with Gwen Stacy, and to say she died, you know, they just killed Batman, and what?
That doesn't sound real.
Twice.
Yeah.
They killed him twice.
They killed him twice. Yes. In different ways. So they, you know, bludgeoned him to death like a baby seal.
Someone on the internet do that. Put a little bat cowl on a baby seal.
No! No! Don't do that! Somebody burnt that baby seal!
Scariest show
ever. You know,
ever.
It's like, I mean, who really thinks Batman is dead? He's dead.
You're absolutely right, though. I mean, I guess that's what I'm kind of saying with the Gwen Stacy thing, is that after that, every character has come back. And the more
Uncle
times...
Uncle Ben?
They brought Uncle Ben from an alternate dimension back in Peter David's run.
Peter David regretted doing that story. He told us on the show when he was on. He was like, it never worked. And I think it's because it was like, I made fans uncomfortable because it's like, this is the one guy you can't bring back.
Before he wrote that was like in, like, you know, you keep notes of like stuff you want to do. I so wanted to have like an Uncle Ben comes back story, and the minute Spider-Man sees it, it's like, no, and finds Mysterio and beats the hell out of him.
Yeah, right.
I want to do that like in one issue, but then Peter beat me to it. So for me, it's because I know you said Gwen Stacy. For me, as a young reader, the death that affected me the most was Captain Stacy.
Yeah.
That was Spider-Man's like second father figure, and he died, and it was, when you look at the comic, it's Spider-Man's fault. He's the one who shot Doc Ock with that stuff that made the arms go crazy. And I remember reading that and being really affected by that as a young kid. And that stayed with me, that depth. But on the DC side, when the original Doom Patrol died and the series ended. What about when they killed Jason Todd and everyone called in? Everyone pushing their buttons like they were killing
him. What about Hitman?
Hitman?
It didn't move us, sorry.
It didn't move? Did that move you?
It was tragic. Let me just say, four months.
Yeah. Cool.
When I was a kid, it would have to be Phoenix, because that was before there was an internet, so I didn't know it was coming. And I was like, what? No, Gene, Scott, no, they can't be together. And, you know, that was kind of the quintessential death at that time, and it was very painful.
Well, she didn't die. She was in an egg at the bottom of the ocean.
I didn't know that. See, I was young. I didn't know yet.
Well, they meant that. They meant that when it
happened. You must take away all of our rainbows, Alex.
But if you have a question, raise your hand. Peace could bring you a gift. And thank you, Booth Bag! All right. It is time for our next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek. Going to talk about today is a little bit about Marvel salaries, actually. Well, this is Mickey Rourke, totally separate story. Mickey Rourke and Evan Rachel Wood. Evan Rachel Wood played his daughter in The Wrestler. They are now hooking up!
He just left Marilyn Manson. Ew!
And then he absorbed her.
Well, before she did, after she dated Marilyn Manson, she dated a catcher's mitt for a while.
Lateral.
Why are we talking about this?
We're not specifically talking about this. This is a picture I got. But that Sam Jackson is now, it's not clear whether he's going to play Nick Fury in Iron Man 2 because of salary. Mickey Rourke was offered reportedly $250,000 to play the main villain in Iron Man 2.
And a sandwich.
Yeah.
See, the funny thing is, before The Wrestler, if they offered him a sandwich, you would have been golden.
Yeah, just a sandwich.
But after, you know, after The Wrestler, after he's getting all these awards, doesn't that kind of seem like a slap in the face? And why is Marvel doing this?
I think they don't want to spend as much money.
My friend, you're a genius.
I really have a grasp of Hollywood.
Do you think between this and also getting rid of Terrence Howard and putting in Don Cheadle, is this hurting Iron Man 2 at all?
Well, yeah. Definitely. I mean, it's bad press. And if you don't have Samuel Jackson's Nick Fury, then you've just blown the whole setup. That's what I went back when they were starting. We found out they were starting to do that. I was like, how are they going to manage to pay for all these stars to be in this Avengers movie they're talking about? Because it's going to be insane. Maybe that's why they're trying to cut back now.
Right.
Because if you had Robert Downey Jr., whoever else for the rest of the
Norton.
They're not going to have it.
Dude, and then the other guy.
I think we've CGI'd Ed Norton. I think most of the films have CGI'd Ed
Norton. Yeah. Yes.
But, well, you know, Marvel produces its own movies. They have their own movie studio, and they finance them themselves. So Marvel is nothing if not very wise with their money. I mean, they're very frugal, and they've been very successful with the way they've been handling their finances. So, I mean, I think it's just for them. They're just being very cautious. And all, you know, it's very sad. The Astro Boy movie is being made, a CGI Astro Boy movie, and there's a big story about
Ed Norton.
Yep. And Evan Rachel. But the studio doesn't even have the financing to continue making the movie. So there might not be this CGI Astro Boy movie. They already have concept art. They've been working on it. So
for ages.
Yeah, it's very, it's Hollywood, it's tight. So
the economy hurts us all. Even comic books. Oh, God.
Well, as long as, you know, they don't downgrade to the level of Punisher 4 or whatever it was. I still have some hopes for Iron Man 2, but they're just being very cautious, I think.
Are you saying that I have a chance for Samuel L. Jackson's part now?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Possible. Or what pay enough to get in your movie?
Yeah, what's your salary base these days?
Sandwich.
With a dollar inside.
Nice.
Smart. Swing my at least.
Sweet. Cool. Glad we solved that. next thing we were going to talk about was Diamond Comics, but I think we already hit that, so
yeah,
that's good.
That's a diamond.
That's a diamond.
Will you marry me?
Weird. Yeah, we're inviting someone in the audience to propose to Kimmy.
If you're interested, come up to us after the show. But next thing we're going
to
do
go
is...
Go to her. Why don't you just go up to her?
Talk to us.
No, no. We'll
handle it.
Everything goes through us. We are going to show you, which we're pretty excited about, a trailer. Our friend Scott Bateman is reanimated an old movie called Adam Age Vampire, which he's showing here at the Pit on Thursday. He's been on the show a couple of times. That's a diamond. And why don't you hit play?
I did, and we'll see what happens.
So what I'm looking for in a man.
Nice. Bam.
Who's really push your assistant. Nice. Push play anytime. And
$25 in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like an opportunity to win $25? Yes, guy holding another guy's hand. Come on down. Yeah.
Oh, it's that kind of party.
It's how are you? What's your name?
Party. Drew.
Drew, audience? Audience Drew.
Hi. All
right. So here's the gift card that could be yours if you answer the trivia. Oh, did I forget to mention there was trivia? Oh, all right. How this is going to work is you will hear three questions.
Okay.
After each question, you listen to three possible answers. Choose the correct one. Get all three right. $25 yours. So today's trivia, thank you, Boothman, is going to be on the Mighty Avengers.
Ooh.
Yeah. So if you're paying attention at all, maybe you'll get these right. Here we go. Who on the new team is the most what? Exactly. Is it A, Amadeus Cho, B, Jarvis, or C, Andrew Lloyd Webber? So it's either A, Amadeus Cho, or B, Jarvis. I mean, it's... All right, yeah, either way. I would say Jarvis, but yeah, you know what? We'll give it to you. We'll give it to you.
Really quickly, Pete?
Ooh, yeah.
I'm surprised that one of the answers wasn't, what?
I should have consulted you, and I could have given you writer's credit. Okay. Who has a little something-something going on the team? Is it A, Vision and Stature, B, Jarvis and the Scarlet Witch, or is it C, She-Hulk and Skeletor?
C is very entertaining.
Yeah.
Going with
A is correct. It was a very nice moment. By the way, I really liked it when she got kind of gave him the choked up look where she was like.
And you find out she has the worst taste in music.
It's music.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a 15-year-old girl. Her music is supposed to be.
Okay. In Mighty Avengers number 21, it is revealed that Jocasta A has a thing.
As
a thing to learn about how to answer doors.
Yeah.
B has a crush on Jarvis. Or C is the new Black Panther.
I'll go with A.
A is correct! $25.3!
I would like to point out that the New Ace Die Hard cover is about $16.95. Available in the town counts.
Oh, wow. Every customer counts. Everyone. That's dude. Yeah.
As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show.
It's subliminal.
He likes it. Come to the show, go away with a free seizure. Pete, what are you looking forward to tomorrow?
I want to see what happens with 7 of 7 on the Final Crisis.
What?
Listen, please. Wait. Because to me, like, Batman dying? Like, wouldn't that be the last issue? Like, yeah, I wrap that up. Well, there's another comic! What's gonna happen in that one? So I wanna see what
Robin dies.
Ultimate climax.
When Final Crisis first came out, you said, I will never read this series.
Right.
And what a far journey we've taken. Now you're looking forward to the last issue.
Well, I'm...
you've been converted. Grant Morrison converted.
I hang out with him and eat mushrooms now.
That's fine.
That's a win for Grant Morrison.
Big lose for you, though. I'm looking forward to Incredible Hercules number 125.
Yes.
Best comics out there for Fred Van Lente. And Greg Park.
There's a lot of great stuff coming out.
No insult.
Don't you dare downplay Greg Park.
Didn't downplay.
You did too.
Well, I was saying because Dan was talking about Fred Van Lente.
Yeah.
And you didn't bring up your usual Greg Pak love fest.
He's an amazing writer.
It's Pak with Pak.
Yeah. Pete's Pak with Pak.
They both have beards. and there's a lot of great stuff coming out tomorrow. I'm looking forward to Umbrella Academy Dallas number 3. Umbrella Academy was one of our favorite series of the last 2 years, I think. And this miniseries has been really good as well. Dan?
I've got Amazing Spider-Man Extra coming out number 2 tomorrow. It's got the the first ever solo story for Anti-Venom. But the book I'm really looking forward to is Chris Gage's first issue of Avengers The Initiative. Flying solo. I can't wait to read that.
Is that a little bittersweet for you at all?
No, it's great. It's like watching the kids going off to college.
Can you tell us a little bit of the direction it's going in at all? Or?
An awesome direction. It's starting a big, huge storyline called Avengers Initiative Disassembled.
It's like tying it all together.
It is. Like a beautiful tapestry.
Evil tapestry.
Are you selling tapestry?
I will discuss it in my tapestry song.
I'll be looking forward to a new issue of Usagi Yojimbo. Long running hardcore, but you know, great cartooning by Stan Sakai doesn't get any better than that.
Plug your blog.
Oh, my blog. Yes, I'm looking forward to getting up tomorrow and writing the news about what happened here tonight. PW The Beat. If you Google Heidi and The Beat, it will be your first result.
Second only to the band, Heidi and The Beat.
And that picture of me beating Heidi.
Oh, my God.
Dressed up like a seal.
Some people would like to do that, but anyway. But you cover...
No.
Oh, you're so good.
I know, it's
honorable. We talked about what's happening, and, you know, inside scoops and skullduggery.
Cool.
And Clive Owen.
Lots of Clive Owen.
Kimmy?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me crash this party, you guys.
At first, it's weird. I kept being like, yeah, you can totally watch the show. And I'm going to go on stage.
Yeah.
I can't believe you moved your chair all the way up.
Oh, yes. I didn't look at the list, but I can just know that I'm looking forward to Hitman and... The Mauve Lantern and... and of course, Top Chef is tomorrow, so yeah!
I think you hate
marry me, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. Stay
tuned. Oh, yeah,
by the end of the show, Kimmy can be either be your wife or your child.
We're going to have three trivia questions.
Cool, a couple of things to plug before we go. Next week, we are going to have Brian Lee O'Malley on the show.
Reserve your tickets.
Yes, and the new Scott program is coming out at midnight. Yeah. So you can all head over after the show and watch him side them.
Yeah.
And buy them.
Read it, it's great.
You've read it.
I have.
UPS man gave it to her on the street.
He did, actually.
Very good. So thank you. Very interesting. So definitely tell your friends about that. Also, you can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. A couple of people.
Edge of the internet, my ass.
No, really, that's right. If you've seen the map, we're very close to the edge.
YouTube is the same as internet, but not very popular. A couple of people that I think want to thank Dad for being on the good night!
Thank you!
Oh, the lights came up.
That's what we look like.
I know.
Great show.